Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 58, Con Apostolopoulos Gives Back to the Community. Here's a shout out to listeners in Kailua, Hawaii, Caldwell, Idaho, West Lafayette, Indiana, and Indianapolis, Indiana. With that, let's get started. What does self-care, awareness, flexibility, preparation, initiative, positive attitude, and kindness have in common? Well, according to co-author Coach Khan, these are the seven keys for navigating a crisis, which just happens to be the title of his new book. Khan Apostolopoulos is a speaker and expert in performance improvement and change management. He's also the founder and CEO of Fresh Biz Solutions, and this is a human capital management consultancy, LLC, that delivers training and team-building workshops. He's also the founding partner of the Global Institute for Thought Leadership, which is an organization that is changing the world of ideas. What I find most interesting about Khan isn't that he's an award-winning coach or that he's multilingual. It's that he contributes and wants to give back heartily to the community where he serves. I'm grateful for what Khan does for his community, how he gives back to his profession, and that he has some incredible leadership stories. Part 1, Voice of the Customer. There's been a lot written about customer experience and even voice of the customer. When Khan refers to voice of the customer, he's using the broader definition, not just external customers, but the people we serve, the people that we work with. Khan shares a story from early in his career that gets at the voice of the customer, and it gets us into a conversation about the golden rule, or a revised version of it. Here's Khan with the story.
Gary, early on in my career, probably more than two decades ago, as a young up-and-coming professional, I'd started working with a new boss. Her name was Connie Duquesne. She was one of the best leaders that I've ever worked with. It was at a time when we were presenting our new plan to the senior leadership. Being part of the training and development and organizational development and broader HR departments, we had a responsibility to put forward what we were proposing from a training and development standpoint and why. She had entrusted me with putting together some information, doing some research, and being able to provide her with a series of slides that she was then going to take and do some minor edits and incorporate them in her presentation. She had asked me specifically to get it to her by close of business on Thursday, and she'd given me a few days to do that. In my eagerness to do a good job and to showcase what I was able to do, I worked very, very hard on that. And during that time, Thursday came, close of business on the East Coast came and went. Now, mind you, I live in Denver, so I'm 2 hours behind. So somehow in my eagerness and my obsession with getting this done right, I had convinced myself that no. My boss really didn't mean close of business her time. She meant my time, of course.
Of course.
So I kept working on it. And it was never quite right. I figured that I could do just a little bit more just to make sure that I could produce a little bit more and showcase what I knew. Then my end of business came and went. And then I convinced myself that no. It was the end of the day, literally. By midnight, and midnight East time came and went, midnight Mountain time came and went. At some point, I gave up and finally sent it forward to her, but it was in the middle of the night. Keep in mind that she was going in to meet with senior leadership first thing in the morning. Now, I didn't hear anything until later in the day, and I got a call from her, and I'm sitting on pins and needles. By that time, I had realized that no news was not necessarily good news, and I was very concerned. I was very concerned that I had really messed up. She got on the phone in a very calm voice. She shared with me the results of the session with the senior leadership team. And then she says, I want to give you a little bit of feedback for your learning and development, for your personal development. She says, you really put me in a bind. You put me in a very difficult spot. I asked you for something very specific and what you delivered was good, but not when I asked you to deliver it. She says, I want you to understand this. And this quote has stuck with me, Gary.
Okay.
She says, I want you to understand that sometimes your B product on time is more important to me, is what I need rather than your A product late.
Oh, wow.
Think about that statement and what that means. Your B product on time is more important to me than your A product late. she could have turned around and basically fired me because I put her in a difficult situation because I had not met the expectations and put her in a very difficult situation with senior leadership. Instead, she saw that as a learning opportunity, as an opportunity to help me grow and develop in my career. And that stuck with me. And not only in my professional career, and later on, as I started getting more and more involved with performance improvement and getting beyond just training and development, I realized that there's a name for this, and it's called the voice of the customer. And literally, that's exactly what we're talking about. What does your customer need? What are they saying is important to them? How many times have we approached things from purely from our perspective? And we fall in love with our solutions or with our ideas and not really take into consideration who it is that we're providing that service, that idea to.
There's one point in particular that reminded me of one of the leadership beliefs that goes something like this. Allowing teams to make mistakes enables them to be open with their mistakes and learn from the experience. And it sounds like this was a great example of making a mistake, learning from it, and then expanding that to thinking about the voice of the customer. I like that perspective. And too often we don't think of our internal customers, including our colleagues that work with us and the person we report to, thinking of them as customers.
Yeah. And expand that beyond that, because to me, I took that lesson, not just in my professional career. There's multiple stories that I could share with you where that played into it. One thing I wanted to illustrate is that this made a profound difference for me in my personal life. About the same time, we had moved here to the United States with my wife, and we were visiting, we were planning to have dinner with her grandmother at the time. And it was about an hour away from where we lived. Grandma had asked us to join her for dinner at 5 o'clock. Now, the cultural differences between myself being Greek and my wife being red-blooded American gal are very, very distinct as from a cultural standpoint as far as time management goes. And that could be a whole nother episode unto itself, to be honest with you. The important point here is that being an hour away, you would think that what time should we be there? Well, at least a few minutes before five, I would think, for dinner. I mean, any normal person would assume that here culturally. Well, to me, 4:30, I'm getting in the shower to try to get ready. By that time, my wife was very, very upset with me. She said, "You're disrespecting me. You are disrespecting my family, and you're not taking into consideration what matters to me." The message that I had learned earlier that I shared with you rang with me. And normally I would be all up in arms because from a cultural standpoint, as a Greek, I would say, "Well, what do you expect me to do? I mean, we're going for a social visit. It's not a business meeting. I expect that we'll show up around a certain time and approximately. I don't expect that to be a 45-minute dinner. And then grandma picks up the plates and starts ushering us out so she can watch Jeopardy at 6. Mind you, that's what happened. But beside that point, the important thing to remember is that all of a sudden, I realized that in her eyes, I was doing something that was unacceptable. I may have been having a certain intention from my end, but what was received, my actions on her end, were very, very different. My quote-unquote customer had a different need and an expectation from me. And how many times have we gone through our life, professionally and personally, where we tend to judge ourselves by our intentions, but the rest of the world tends to judge us by our actions and their needs, their perspectives?
Our behaviors speak so much louder volume than our best intent. And if our best intent is to accomplish something like delivering a presentation by a specific time and you don't make it, then your best intent means nothing.
Exactly. Nobody's going to see it because it's way past that time. For you and for me, now that we have, you know, a certain experience under our belt, I'm sure that the first question that we ask when somebody asks us to present is, who's the audience and what are their needs?
It reminds me of another belief that employees serve customers before serving management. Mm-hmm. It's a slightly different viewpoint. It kind of gets to your point when you think of not only family as your customers in the sense, if you use the broader term, mm-hmm. that your friends, your colleagues, the principle of putting others first is a critical one in leadership.
Correct. Piece that we need to remember as leaders, as service providers, as whatever we are in our life, as we interact with others, it's important for us to be able to understand where they're coming from, what their needs are. And if we are offering something of ourselves, professionally or personally, it's important to understand that that should match what their expectations are. You know, we talk about the golden rule and treating others the way that we would like to be treated. In my life, I've kind of evolved that rule to say, treat others the way that they want to be treated, the way that they expect to to be treated. Because as we grow, as we mature, as we evolve, and as we see more in our lives, and even beyond our narrow focus on our current culture or environment, there are differences out there. And it's important for us to be able to understand and recognize those differences and be able to reach out to people in a meaningful way. And also ask those dumb questions. I mean, those questions that are obvious that nobody assumes to ask, but we need to ask and find out what matters to them. How can we serve them? How can we best support them?
Part 2, crises can shape our career path. Most of the people on the show are lifelong learners, and Khan is no exception to that. He highly values education, learning, and professional development. Khan shares a story about his early days growing up, and the story that he shares morphs into something different, which eventually leads to what I call one of the first leadership principles, and that's believe in others. When someone believes in you, it opens up doors of opportunities. Here's Khan to share a story.
One of the unique parts of my life, Gary, is that I am a first-generation immigrant to this country, but I'm also born to first-generation immigrants in a whole other country. My parents adventured away from Greece, our homeland, in the 60s, and were invited to Australia as part of a growing workforce that was invited into the country to start filling the factories and working there. They went there and started building their life. At some point, like many immigrants, they wanted to return back home, and they did. In the beginning of the 80s, 1980, I found myself as a young man, my family returning back to Greece. The circumstances there were not easy. It was a difficult time. Family was not affluent. In fact, I didn't realize how poor we were until I left the house, until I got out on my own. So at the time, being a product of a family that really had very little education and was in desperate need of some support, they sent me off to apprentice with an uncle of mine. He was a commercial painter. So I ended up at the age of almost 13, 14, in a situation where I was working as a day laborer there. I remember an incident in the winter. I was at the top of the building, kind of literally hanging outside there and kind of preparing some railing there to be painted and looking catty corner across the street at the kids in the schoolyard that were getting ready to start their day. Now, mind you, my day started 2 hours earlier. So I'm looking at them playing their games and getting ready, and then the school bell rang and they all rushed in to start their class, to start their day. I felt myself getting choked up in the moment. It still kind of is a little bit difficult, I have to admit, but I felt tears streaming down my eyes. I felt in the moment that something was wrong with this picture. Why wasn't I one of those kids out there being able to go to school? I was able to go to night school, but it didn't feel the same because I found myself amongst people that were much older than me trying to complete their school and get their diploma. So I realized at a very young age the importance of learning, the importance of education. Somewhere along the way, I would value that. I would seek out every opportunity that I could to learn, to develop. There's a quote that comes to my mind. The two most important days in your life are the day you come into this world and the day you realize why. And as I look back on my life, whether it was that moment or an accumulation of other moments like that, I realize that I've always been not only a lifelong learner, but because I am a lifelong learner, I've evolved into a teacher, a trainer, a coach. That's kind of how I've become that way. And all of the jobs and all of the different activities that I've done throughout my life in the military or professionally or other places, the emphasis has always been on being a coach, on being a teacher, on being someone who focuses on reaching certain results or helping others grow their skills so they can achieve their goals. And that's been an important part of my life. And that's kind of shaped what I've been able to do. I connect the dots looking back that way, and it's no surprise to me that I've ended up where I am today.
As you're speaking, I'm taking notes, of course, and I'm thinking about this and reflecting, and I realize, in a sense, one of the most ultimate compliments to lifelong learning or appreciating lifelong learning is giving back and helping others grow and learn and develop. There's another belief, helping others figure out their development enhances their ability to make contributions.
Yeah, because we all have that in us somewhere. There's a calling. And sometimes we pursue that when that calling is evident and we feel that we can be successful and we can make a living out of it or the circumstances are right. And sometimes we find that calling in the day jobs that we do, in the moments as we do. I mean, in all honesty, the crises that not just of 2020, but the ones before then have shaped a lot of my career path and the way that I've moved throughout my professional life. I may add a little bit here if I may. In 2012, I found myself following the financial meltdown of 08 and the economy here not fully recovering. I found myself, to no fault of my own, reorged out of my previous role, finding myself out and about looking for a job. And as I was looking for my next career move, you know, I'd met with people, I talked to people, they all seemed to love what I could bring to the table, my experience extensively, how I've helped others, the results that I've gotten. But everybody was reluctant to hire me. Partially, at least from their perspective, they felt that they couldn't afford my skills or whatever the case might be. As I was looking for that, that summer I lost my mother. So I had time on my trip back from Greece after her funeral and everything, after settling her affairs, to think about what I wanted to do next. And as I was going through my thinking and my process, something inside me told me, pick up the phone and call Paul. Now, Paul was an HR director that I had met and I'd interviewed with. Even though he, like many others, had said, you know, we love what you can do, but we don't feel we can afford you, he actually went a little bit further and said, you know, I'd really like to work with you. And I said, okay. So I picked up the phone and called him and I explained to him my situation. I explained to him what was going on. Paul was kind enough to say, let's have lunch. We sat down. I said, Paul, you said you have so much work that you could use some help. How can I help you? He says, well, I have a number of projects. Can you do this? And he explained the project to me. And I said, sure. So I had the opportunity to deliver that project to him. He liked it. He asked me again. He says, can you do this other thing? And I said, yeah. So I delivered that project. He liked that. Well, Paul came back and said, I have these two or three important things that I need to get done. And I'd like to package them into one offer that I'd like for you to bid on. See if you can win the bid. I said, sure. Now, mind you, I had no idea what bidding meant, especially with a pseudo state agency as a community college or anything like that. So I quickly figured out what was needed, how to do it, established a company name and everything else, and within the timeline, submitted my proposal. Luckily for me, I was able to win that bid, and that became my first customer in a newly formed consulting practice. The message from that is sometimes it only takes one person to say yes. When you are in the right place, doing what you love, and you're passionate about it, it only takes one person to say yes to make the difference.
If you think about the entrepreneurial life that a lot of us lead, even after leaving a regular corporate job, there is so much of disappointment, rejection, lack of work, things don't work out. Sometimes it takes just one, and in this case, one client to believe in you, to let you show your value, your worth. That makes all the difference in the world.
It does. And again, connecting the dots, looking backwards, all of my life had prepared me for that exact moment, whether it was what people call gig economy here, we call it just working back home in Greece, where we piece together different activities, or working for large corporations and essentially being an entrepreneur, being somebody inside the organization who's trying to find innovative ways of working or overseeing training functions as a business, and always thinking to myself, wow, what would it look like if I actually had my own training practice? Or consulting for large organizations and being able to operate that way. All of those things prepared me for that moment when I became an accidental entrepreneur and all of a sudden hung my shingle outside and said, I'm going to serve customers and I'm going to win work. Hopefully, if they like it, they'll recommend me and they'll use me again.
Part 3, shift between the learning and performance zones. As I mentioned in the prologue, Khan gives back in a number of ways, and one way is through his coaching. Khan shares with us one of his stories about coaching, which leads us into a conversation about the interplay between what he calls the learning zone and the performance zone. Within all this, there's some advice he offers. But first, here's Khan with his story.
Yeah, and I'd like to be able to share here at this point, Gary, if I may. For many, I go by Coach Khan. And the reason I go by Coach Khan is not just because I coach executives and emerging leaders, but because I coach youth soccer. Over the years, I've coached probably hundreds of players here in my community. It's my way of giving back. I was attracted to it, first of all, because my daughter played a little bit, and that gave me the chance to kind of get back into it. I played when I was young. Between my love for the game my love of teaching and coaching and my love for working with kids, it was a natural fit for me to go back in and kind of pursue that. And having the ability to give back to my community where I live, to the families that are my neighbors, to the kids that I watch grow up here in the community, seeing the changes that we can make to future leaders by helping them develop the right skills now at that very, very young age is so, so important.
I don't think you just coached these young children on soccer. I think you are modeling and coaching a lot more than that.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Because in many ways, my mantra, my philosophy is that I teach life skills. It just happens to be through soccer. The more that we can do that, and not just broad-based kids, but especially I have an affinity for working with young women, young girls, because I believe that there is so much room, so much opportunity for us to be able to develop our young women and help them become the leaders that they can be. Our society, our businesses, our world will become a better place when we have more diverse leaders running a lot of these operations. In so many ways, that's so critical to me, and I think it's such an underserved area. I love the opportunity to be able to serve that way. One of the things that I do, Gary, from that perspective is I bring all of my complete toolbox, all of the tools that I use with my corporate clients, whether that be visualization, goal setting, strategic planning, feedback sessions, performance reviews, all of the gamut of tools that I use, I bring them back and I use them with the kids. They just don't know that that's what we're doing. We don't call it that. We simplify it. As we have success, as we have experiences with the kids, what I love doing is taking those stories back to the executives and showing them in very simple terms a lot of the things, the complex leadership issues that we discuss and how we approach that. One of the things that I think is important and I want to leave our audience with today is the need as we move forward, as we have younger generations coming into the workforce, as we see younger leaders taking the helm in our society, in our businesses, and everywhere else, it's important to understand that these younger generations have slightly different needs than their previous ones. They do believe in open communication, in purpose, in feedback, and performance management being an ongoing process rather than a date on the calendar. And through that, they are more and more engaged and understand the need for us to learn, unlearn, and relearn as we move forward. That ability to be able to retool themselves, to be able to update what they know in real time as information changes is so critical.
Back to earlier in the conversation, getting to know your customer applies to getting to know the younger generation and what their unique needs are or slightly different needs are than, say, when we were growing up.
Yep, absolutely. And that's an important part. And I'm so optimistic about the future. You know, many people look at the younger generation like every generation before has looked at the following one and kind of frown upon it and become critical of it and everything else. I am so highly optimistic. I have a daughter that's part of the 2020 graduating class, and she showed me so much during this difficult time about her character, about what's important, about what matters, and how she can adapt to things. And that is so critical.
There's more younger people stepping up and taking on the calling to give back to the community. I think you even see it with young legislators, people serving government. I think they're younger and younger than what I remember.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are taking ownership of their future because many of the decisions that we make as more senior generations are impacting them. A lot of the things that we're doing are going to impact them way past the time that we are gone. They're going to have to live with a lot of those decisions. So if they're going to have to live with them, they understand that they should be involved with that. As we look at things, we understand to bring it back down to the practical sense of it. One of the biggest takeaways for me is having a conversation with a dear friend of mine. His name is Eduardo Briseño, and he is a growth mindset expert, meaning that he studies this whole thing about growth mindset and about how we need to be going forward into the future. And one of the important things that I learned from him is that difference from zone to zone as we grow our mindset and everything else. It made me realize the difference that something that I was doing my professional life with my clients, and I didn't realize I was doing it with my kids as well. Let me be more specific with that. When we talk about getting out of our comfort zone and getting beyond certain things in order for us to learn and grow, there's distinct points where each one of these things needs to happen. During the week, I work with the kids very, very hard. I challenge them. I teach them new skills. They fail frequently. We learn from that. We move forward from that. We develop that. And then on the weekends, we go out and we play our games. And then the results matter because they make the difference between us having success in our season or not. And that brought me to the point, as I look at that with our professional clients, with our corporate clients, and understanding that difference between the learning zone and the performance zone, and looking at it and saying, there's a time for us to learn and make mistakes and practice in a safe environment. And there's a time where it's showtime, where the lights are on, where we're in front of the customers, where we're performing at a high level, when we're going out to interview, where we're proposing to win a job, whatever the case might be. And how many times have you seen unskilled leaders chastise an employee in front of a customer and trying to teach them a lesson in real time in front of the customer? That's not the time to make that lesson known. There is a time before then to take them into your office or in a classroom in a safe environment and challenge them and help them learn what they need to learn, to practice, to fail, to learn, to master it. And then they have the chance to showcase what they can do and represent you in front of the customer. So there's a difference between the learning zone and the performance zone.
When we're in the performance zone, I like the distinction you're making, and we make a mistake or something goes wrong. To your point, it may not be the best time to address that mistake, but afterwards, bring that person back in the learning zone and learn from that experience.
Exactly. And that's when we fix things and we continue. And just like with the kids, we're not going to win every game. We're not going to play great every game. But every time we have the opportunity to find one more thing we can work on the following week in our learning zone, in our practice sessions, in our training environment, where we can continue to push ourselves to get better and then have the opportunity to showcase what we learned in the game that matters. And that's the difference when I watch a lot of the other coaches out there and I see them going about and challenging kids and yelling at them and coaching them and trying to train them in the moment in real time. That's not the time to do that. The work happens during the week. Now is the time for the kids to play.
My thanks to Khan Apostopoulos. If you'd like to learn more about Khan, go to the show notes. And if you have a comment or question, go to unlabeledleadership.com. Click the message icon, and you can leave a voicemail up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who contribute to the show. Your contributions help with the production expenses. But mostly, I'd like to thank you, listeners, for what you do, and that's listening to these shows. Without listeners from the more than 250 cities, this show would not be around. Until next time, lead on!